Well, it's to be hoped that for any outdoor event, the weather will be kind. But the weather doesn't seem to be of concern to our feathered friends the birds. Let's Talk nature writer Barry Madden has discovered that they appear to be coping very well indeed. Here's Tony.
Despite the rather chilly and dull early spring, our garden birds seem to have been quite productive. Anecdotally, I would say our local avifauna have managed to fledge more young this year than in any other I can remember. This may be because the local magpies have failed to breed successfully, or it may be the birds adapted a different breeding strategy to combat the inclement conditions. The blackbirds, aided by a particularly intolerant and aggressive male, have raised two broods. I suspect the female is incubating a third clutch of eggs as I type. That's in late June. The benefits of having such protective parents, the hen has also been quite physical, is quite clear in that any potential predator, particularly those marauding magpies, are seen off promptly without getting a chance to attack the vulnerable young birds. The vocal protests of the male also attract other birds, which all helps to deter any ill-intentioned adversary. I've often pondered why smaller birds haven't adopted the strategy of combined physical attack against magpies, crows and jays, or indeed birds of prey. Without the fear of actual contact, most predators learn to ignore the mobbing of the victims and simply go about their business, sometimes acting as a pair. This anomaly is never starker than visiting such a common tern colony as opposed to that of their very close relatives, the Arctic terns. Common terns will stoop, scold and come close without ever making contact, whereas Arctics will hit and draw blood. Not much tries it on with Arctic terns, but common terns are easy prey for gulls, kestrels and the like. In any event, Exocet, as we have affectionately called him, is the king of the local blackbirds, and long may he reign. Other success stories locally are starlings that seem to have had a very productive second brood during June, great tits, wood pigeons and blue tits. The latter was something of a surprise given the dearth of available food during the normal breeding slot. Nature, as ever it will, found a way with pairs nesting later than usual, resulting in youngsters picking aphids off the roses during late June as opposed to the usual mid-May. And then we have the dunnocks. A pair have been busy nesting in ivy just outside the kitchen window. I watched the parent birds feeding young over a period of 3 days in mid-June and managed to photograph them from quite close range. Having sorted through my images and looked at the timings of visits, together with the prey times in the dunnocks' beaks, I am quite astounded to discover that 1. The average time between visits to the nest was about 5 minutes. Both parents visited at regular intervals. On the basis of these 12 visits an hour between, say, 5 a.m. and 8 p.m., for the 12 days nesting period, well over 2,000 visits to the nest would have been made. 2. Each parent had a distinct routine when visiting the nest. One bird would perch briefly atop a tall holly bush to ensure no predators were visible before flying into the hedge several metres from the nest site. It would then proceed to quietly make its way through the dense foliage prior to deliver food to the chicks. The other bird would also perch on a lookout post before flying very low and close to the house to deliver food from the other direction. 3. A huge range of invertebrate prey items were delivered to the young, including woodlice, click beetles, crane flies, aphids, millipedes, small moth larvae, large caterpillars, small bees, seeds, and, on one occasion, a treble brown spot moth. These were the items I could identify. I'm certain there were many others. And 4. Very crude calculations based on an average of the food items per visit results in something like 10,000 items of food being brought to the nest, all found in a quite small area covering a few suburban gardens. All that is form a single pair of dunnocks. Add in the robins, wrens, chaffinches, blackbirds, etc., and the numbers and variety of invertebrates inhabiting a modest garden is quite bewildering. Imagine how many such morsels are needed to satisfy the hunger of fledgling birds all over the country. It runs into billions. Our garden is managed for wildlife, with other adjoining gardens having wild areas, so I think this proves that leaving parts of the lawn uncut, refraining from too much tidying up, creating a log pile and allowing a few wildflowers to establish at the bottom of a hedge really does result in an abundance of wild creatures. Refraining from the use of chemicals also plays a big part in the process. Natural control measures are far more effective, and it certainly helps the birds. After all that citizen science, I think I need a rest. Time, perhaps, to sit outside with a glass of something chilled and bathe in the knowledge that in our combined garden oases, nature is still thriving and provides fascination for anyone who cares to look.
Well, it certainly sounds as if the birds in Barry's garden are thriving.